Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.
The following is an Auburn Network production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Friday edition. It is the Black Friday. It is Iron Bowl Eve. And we welcome you into The Drive here on this Friday. We will keep you updated. There is football going on, college and NFL football going on right now. We can keep you updated on that. Man, not a lot of defense in the Egg Bowl. As look up Ole Miss kicked the field goal on their opening possession.
What kind of game were you expecting? Were you thinking maybe Mississippi State would struggle to score, but Ole Miss would go up and down the field? Or did you think maybe it'd be a defensive struggle?
No, I had a feeling there'd be some points. Yeah. Ole Miss has been pretty solid defensively this year, but Mississippi State scored the next two times they had the ball. They led 14-3, but now Ole Miss has come back, and they lead it 17-14. We're not even halfway through the second quarter.
State needs to pull off an upset to avoid going 0-8 in conference this season. And I just I don't know, Bill. Like that was always a tough job. I wonder if in the era of the NIL and free portal transfers, I wonder if that's going to be a harder job than ever to build a win.
State?
Yeah, I think that's going to be a tougher one.
But this ball game,
although they're in the top 25 in men's basketball, so if you hire the right, you know what? If you build it, if you build it, you know what? Right? I mean, that's how you explain people winning at places that have never enjoyed this kind of success ever before. Like most, you can talk about the infrastructure and the boosters and all that, but usually it's Auburn men's basketball is having the greatest period in the history of Auburn men's basketball, in large part because of almost entirely because of Bruce Pearl. I would look at what's happening in Oxford, right? Ole Miss is, even if they haven't gotten over the hump yet.
I think they have better resources, wouldn't you say, Don, than Mississippi State?
Yes.
We'll go ahead.
With their alumni,
But he's winning as consistently over these last couple of years as much as
he's not winning as consistently now as Ole Miss fans thought he would this year.
No, that's
the expectations were it's playoffs or it's a disappointing season. And now they got a chance to fall to 8-4.
Right, and I think they're going to win this game and go 9-3 and 5-3 in the conference. But even still, I don't know if 9-3 and 5-3 in the conference was where people thought they would be going. Especially
not with the schedule they had.
Especially if you told them you're going to beat Georgia,
right?
Like you're going to have a team good enough to beat Georgia at home, and you're still going to lose three of these SEC games and probably be on the outside looking into the college football playoff. Incredibly. I mean, I thinking about the era of Houston Nutt and the beginning of the Hugh Freeze, the notion of 9-3 being a disappointment at Ole Miss.
Yeah, and David Cutcliffe had a couple of good years.
He had the exceptional year with his last year with Eli right there.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
10-win
season.
The Kentucky game's going to haunt them for the rest of their lives. I mean, at home.
Yeah. Yeah, no
they
kidding.
They killed them.
They had LSU on the ropes.
Ball game here in the Egg Bowl, it has been amazingly close, even though State has been well behind Ole Miss quite a few of these years. Mm-hmm. This ball game is more one of those. A lot of times you hear people say, oh, boy, in this rivalry game, you can throw the record book out. This one is more like that than in most rivalry games. I remember Philip Marshall wrote again a line from Clyde Bolton that I remember from years and years ago. He said, when someone said, hey, in this rivalry, you can throw the record book out. He goes, if you do that, the only thing that's going to happen is you're going to lose your records. because the better team generally wins. Now, there have been some huge upsets in the Iron Bowl, but a lot more upsets in the Egg Bowl.
Well, and in the Iron Bowl, you know, I think it's safe to say that generally when a team has come in as a huge favorite in the Iron Bowl, they've looked like that huge favorite on the field, with the exception, I would say, of the last two Iron Bowls
at Jordan-Hare,
mm-hmm. where you've had an overwhelming favorite who looks very mortal throughout the whole game and nearly loses the football game, wins, but doesn't come close to covering the huge number that had been given to them before the game. You know, since Nick Saban arrived in Tuscaloosa, and you were there at that game.
Yeah.
You were there in 2008. Well, you both were. It 2000.
Thanks. Yeah, I was there.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I was or not. My body was there, but whoo, what a butt.
Fortunately, I don't know. Fortunately, I mean, I wasn't as close to the action, which wasn't as exciting.
What was your sense, Coach, of when you knew Nick Saban was going to enjoy more success at Alabama than maybe the previous couple of coaches had enjoyed?
I think it would have been that recruiting class with Julio. Mm-hmm. He dominated everybody in Mobile. We couldn't even get a sniff out of those kids, and that had never happened because Joe Whitt kind of owned Mobile.
Absolutely,
we got shut out basically, and I don't know who was in that class. I do remember him.
Julio was definitely the key. And,
Patrick, yeah, when it comes to mind.
And then
one of that group.
Oh man,
Marcel Darius,
and they just changed. It seemed like to me in 1 year from when we beat him his first year here, we didn't beat him bad, but we won. But when we saw them the next year, it was a complete – they just looked different size-wise, athletic-wise. And I remember one time I told this story before. Julio ran out of bounds, and I kind of was in the way and put my hands on his arms. I couldn't even get my hands around. And he just, like, tensed and looked at me, and I went, whoo! And he was a man among men.
Wow. And they had had – I mean, it's not as though Alabama had been at the bottom of the conference your entire tenure.
No.
At
no.
Auburn leading up to that.
Couple
they'd
times,
had success.
You know,
I mean,
couple times
Mike Shula had a 10-win season.
Yeah. The 05 yeah. team starts out 9-0, right? I mean, it's earlier they'd had a team that – they'd had the team that would have gone to the SEC championship game if not for the probation rules, right? So, I mean, they'd had some talent come through Tuscaloosa at that point.
Right.
But you could tell with that 2018.
Just completely changed.
Two recruiting classes in, mm-hmm. which, interestingly enough, like that game in the Nick Saban era is about where we are now in the Hugh Freeze era. We're at the end of year two. Now, granted, you know, there are different circumstances around there, but you wonder if... You know, Auburn showed that they have a team that can face down top 15 talent last week.
Yep.
And you're starting to – I mean, the concerns that you had – when you think about Auburn being a huge underdog in the – let's go with 21, Bill. Like the 21 Iron Bowl, the end of – it's the end of year one
right.
for Harsin.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that there was a
TJ Finley's your quarterback.
TJ Finley's your quarterback, and the notion there is a pretty sizable gap, right? In the
there was no question,
and I'm not saying there's not a gap now, but Auburn
the gap is much
tell me about
much smaller than it was the last 3 years
and,
for sure
and getting and smaller for a while. And get you know
appears
and,
to be
yeah I mean
with the,
like,
with the recruiting class that Auburn you know has committed. And is expecting to sign in 5 days.
And the talent that Alabama could be losing after this season. Not that Auburn's not losing a lot of talent too, mm-hmm. but I'm you know, and there are you know, there's new coaches for both programs since that game in particular. But I mean, thinking about, I mean, it's you get the feeling that you know we said this yesterday with Jason,
right.
Coach, that if the Hugh Freeze era ends in triumph, if it ends, you know, if it experiences championships and that kind of triumph during the season the way previous Auburn coaches have, that game against A&M on Saturday night is going to be pointed to as maybe the start of a you know a turning point
mm-hmm.
maybe in that Hugh Freeze era, and yeah, we'll see how Auburn follows up that turning point. Against Alabama in the Iron Bowl. Granted, it's in Tuscaloosa.
Right.
We have a couple of guests joining us today. One is a postponement from Thanksgiving, when obviously we weren't on the air. David Pascal from Chattanooga will join us right at the top of the hour number two at the 5 o'clock hour. And we will check in with Barrett Salee in just a few minutes, our regular Friday afternoon guest. We've got so much we can talk about. As we were going off the air on Wednesday, Auburn was in the final couple of seconds of wrapping up the Maui Invitational. Jahni Broome, the MVP, and Auburn, I mean, just dominant there. After the first half of the Iowa State game, Auburn was, I mean, they weren't challenged in the next five halves. They never trailed in games two or three against North Carolina and Memphis.
Auburn is the hottest team in men's college basketball right now. Maybe the best team in men's college basketball. But I would absolutely understand a vote to put Auburn number one. Mm-hmm. Auburn goes to Cameron Indoor next week in a showdown of two of the teams that it's one versus two in the KenPom overall player rating. So you're talking about Jahni Broome, who right now is making a case to be the first ever recipient from Auburn for a National Player of the Year award. He's going to face off against a guy a lot of people think is the first overall pick in next year's NBA draft, the freshman from Maine, mm-hmm. Cooper Flag, the Duke big man. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Flag, Broome versus Flag is must watch early regular season college basketball, and Auburn's played a couple of those games. I mean, that Houston game, that Iowa State game, North Carolina, and then Memphis had looked as good as anyone not in the top 25 through these first couple of weeks. And Auburn, from the moment that game started, mm-hmm. Auburn made Memphis play Auburn's game, and Auburn had the advantage on both ends of the floor.
Oh, no question about it. So we can talk about that. Obviously, we will preview the Iron Bowl tomorrow, 2:30 kick between the Tigers and the Tide up in Tuscaloosa. Again, Barrett Salee going to be joining us. We'd love for you to join in as well. You can give us a call on the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar, that number 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors.
We'll go ahead and get to our first break. Give us a little bit of time with Barrett Salee, who is in Athens, getting ready to cover the Georgia Tech game, which comes up a little later on this evening. So we'll get to our first break of the afternoon. Stick with us here on the Friday Drive.
For loving expert care for your pets, visit Moores Mill Animal.
Cameron and Dan Peck on Auburn Opelika Sports Leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill and Dan joined by Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. And we're going to head to the Drive Hotline. Welcome in our good friend from College Football Smothered and Covered, Sirius XM, Outkick. That is Barrett Salee. Happy Thanksgiving, Barrett.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Sitting here in a very chilly Sanford Stadium in Georgia, waiting the clean old-fashioned hate.
You're not in the box? I
stepped outside to talk to you.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
my
nice.
My friends like Mark Slabar are walking in to get out of the cold.
Yeah, no kidding. Georgia's in great shape to make the playoff. Georgia Tech had played. They played much better, but Georgia, about a 17-point favorite in this ball game?
Yeah, and it's dropped really since then. Since a couple days ago, I think it was at 19.5. Now it's down to 17.5, which honestly is very, very surprising to me. Which there's a rumor going around that Georgia Tech's co-starting quarterback Aaron Filo is not going to play today. And yet the line is dropping. So I don't know. Usually that means somebody knows something. And, I've seen Tech. This is the third time I've seen Tech this year. And they're not bad. They pound the rock. They beat you up at the line of scrimmage. So it should be fun. I'm excited to see it. And we'll see. We'll see if Georgia can finish this thing off.
Are they going to rotate Friday games in the SEC on Thanksgiving weekend? Or is there a belief that it's going to stick with the Egg Bowl and maybe Georgia Tech?
What happened to LSU, Arkansas?
With the ESPN in control of all of it, I mean, I think some consideration was that they were sharing with CBS.
Say that is because the Egg Bowl is, they want to get that more exposure. They can't do that on Thanksgiving because the NFL took over. Mm-hmm. And honestly, they want to get this game more exposure too, because Georgia Tech gets buried with all of the other rivalries on Rivalry Saturday. So I do think that getting these two sort of out of the way actually is really beneficial for the rest of the SEC, because, you know, fans around the country gets to see, you know, these two rivalries, and they're awesome. You know, you guys know the Egg Bowl. That's as passionate and as fierce as the Iron Bowl in terms of what it means to that state. And I mean, this one, generally speaking, when Tech is halfway decent, is a lot of fun too. So I do think they're going to keep them on Black Friday.
Well, the Egg Bowl is definitely chippier than the Iron Bowl. I mean,
yeah.
Don knows.
Yep, I've been in a few of them, including the Brawl.
There might be another one of those today if this keeps up.
Right.
Yeah, now, what a crazy time it has been as we head down the stretch here and into the last regular season weekend for the college football playoffs. I mean, last week, the SEC was feeling really good going into last weekend. Now they're really scrambling, you know, hoping to be able to get more than three teams in.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really hard to do that because the fourth would be Alabama, and I just don't think that the committee will be able to overlook just how they've looked in their losses. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously that things can change based on the landscape of the season, and that's been pretty apparent in the last few weeks as chaos has sort of gripped our sports. So, the SEC, I think, is hurting right now, and it's honestly to the benefit of the ACC, because mm-hmm. now you're looking, I think, at people realizing that SMU is actually a really good football team. The winner of the ACC championship game will get in, and the loser probably will too, unless it's Clemson and they lose, and then you never know what's going to happen around the country. Now the Mountain West is in an interesting spot, because what happens if UNLV beats Boise State? Do both of those teams get in? So there are a lot of different options, but the fact that the SEC basically played itself out of a surefire four spots is not what I would imagine Greg Sankey wants. And I would imagine there are tweets and Instagram graphics that are ready to go out in full force, whether it be Sunday or late next Saturday night.
So who do you suspect will be campaigning for that final spot in the college football playoff? The 3-9-3 SEC teams, if they get there. I think the Big 12 is, I think with the Tulane loss last night, the Big 12 is probably breathing a sigh of relief, because now it seems unlikely that a Big 12 team will be excluded from the party. Is it that other ACC team, whoever doesn't win the ACC championship game, or you know, sort of campaigning that they still belong in over a team that maybe lost more games from the SEC?
Yeah, you know, I think the biggest thing for me is the Big 12, if Arizona State wins out, then they're going to have a nice bargaining chip. I know Colorado's not there from a resume standpoint. The marketing standpoint is there. But I think the ACC is the one that's going to have the biggest platform if, you know, chalk holds. And honestly, I think the best scenario for the ACC would be to SMU to win the ACC championship and make it look really close against Miami, because I think Miami certainly has a case. So, and then on top of that, I think you might have a situation where you, like I said, like Boise State and UNLV, and if UNLV beats Boise State in the Mountain West championship game. But I think right now, yeah, the Big 12 is the most interesting thing, because they're all kind of beating each other up, and there's no good answer. But really, outside of there's no good answer anywhere now that the SEC teams have beaten themselves up too.
Yeah, and speaking of that, I mean, we'll start on with one game. What a difference the last month has made for the Florida Gators and Billy Napier. Scott Strickland came out and gave him the, you know, said he will be the coach next year. And there were people going, what is he doing? Why is he saying that? They're probably still going to go 4-8 or 5-7. And man, they have turned it around. And I think it was a much bigger shock that they beat Ole Miss this week after they beat LSU the week before. And now you look and they're a prohibitive favorite against Florida State.
Yeah, they are. You know, I don't want to hear anybody say the proverbial vote of confidence means you're getting fired, because Billy Napier has proven that it is not that way. And I'm happy for Billy. They didn't want to fire Billy anyway, because I actually like him personally. And I think moving into Florida State right now if they even keep that game close, then they have to just salvage some kind of good feeling. But man, it's been great to see what Florida's done, because you saw the future with DJ Lagway. You saw, you know, that they've spent a lot of money on their younger kids in the NIL program. So the foundation's there. And, you know, for Florida, you can't keep just recycling coaches over and over and over again, right? Because that's where you get to the point where you are now, where, you know, you're constantly unstable. So, you know, it's been awesome to see Florida. And I truly believe, you know, I'm not Georgia fans or no Georgia administrators can hear me right now, but they would have beaten Georgia, and I think pretty handily, had DJ Lagway not gotten hurt in that cocktail party.
Yeah, I had a bad feeling going back to, it was mid-October, about South Carolina and how the rest of their season was going to play out after they lost that game to Ole Miss. All they've done is, more than just about anybody in the league, get better and better as the season goes on. And I think
they're the hottest team in the SEC right
sure.
now.
Sure. And I mean, and I
maybe
get
the country.
I get why you'd go Clark Lee. Absolutely. I think there's a real argument for Shane Beamer as SEC Coach of the Year.
Yeah, I think there is too. And, you know, if they beat Clemson, you know, a person's going to get a hot mic and talk to every single person on the planet. That's Shane Beamer trying to lobby his team to get into the college football playoff. And, they've done a great job. And honestly, I think that matchup tomorrow against Clemson is way more important than I think the outside world realizes right now. And you're talking about a Clemson team that is very much, you know, alive as well. So, I mean, it was awesome. I never thought Shane was on the hot seat really at South Carolina, but I do think they needed to see something to feel good about the future, and they obviously got that, and they got that in the form of a defense that has been next level with one of the best players in the country as a freshman, and then looking at their quarterback and seeing, wow, this kid developed, because Lenora Sellers was not that good of a passer, and then he got hurt against LSU, and now you look at him and he's not a liability. They're actually using him in a variety of different ways as a passer. So, I mean, it's been nice to see. And I think for South Carolina, you know, you kind of look back and say, what if? Because they pretty much had that Alabama game in hand. Lenore Sellers got hurt against LSU. I don't know if the committee is going to recognize that if they do start discussing South Carolina. But it's been a pretty impressive season. There's no doubt. And I think they proved that in this, you know, new look, you know, expanded SEC without divisions, that they still can be, you know, a force and be a factor going into the last couple weeks of every season.
Yeah, they get the win tomorrow. They have the best argument, I think, of any of the three lost teams in the SEC.
I agree. But they're not going to get the benefit of the doubt because they don't have a crimson helmet with a number on it.
What happened?
The head-to-head is going to factor into some of that, too.
The fact that they would have won six straight and played the way they have.
If South Carolina had not lost to other teams that they were also competing with 4-9-3 and had the same resume, I think it would be incredibly difficult to have Alabama or Ole Miss ahead of South Carolina. At the very least,
Ole Miss, but Alabama, I'd say you look at what Alabama's done lately and what South Carolina's done lately, and you'd love to see those two teams meet again.
The chaos agent,
they say what team, what's the best team, and they leave it subjective, but I can tell you what the best team out of that group is right now, and it's South Carolina.
It sure is.
And as Bill mentioned, shouldn't how you play down the stretch factor into that somewhat?
That's the beauty. That's why they don't paint themselves into a corner. And when they get on a hot mic, they try to paint themselves out of the corner that they just tried to paint themselves into, and it gets to be, you know, mass chaos, and everyone gets angry.
Something else that could factor into this argument. You know, Ole Miss and South Carolina, or Ole Miss and Alabama, both have wins over Georgia, who could be SEC champion. South Carolina has a win over Texas A&M, who could be SEC champion. And to me, that's the team. That's the chaos agent. Especially if they win tomorrow, you know, because you're talking about games. A&M has two games against teams that are probably playoff teams no matter what. A&M's not a playoff team no matter what. A&M needs to win. Right.
But they still can be.
Yeah, absolutely.
If they win these football games. Yeah. And that, to me, makes them exceedingly dangerous, Barrett.
Well, and what's so weird is that, I mean, you guys were there, how at the Auburn game last weekend, like, Texas A&M was fighting for its life, and I don't think anybody on the planet, and I know the SEC office didn't recognize that Georgia could clinch, and B, Texas A&M was still alive after that game, and then they kind of ran the numbers, and it was like, oh, okay, well, and that's emotionally draining for Texas A&M. Think about it. They thought their lives were at stake, and then suddenly they get a respite. So, but no, they're the chaos agent for sure. If A&M wins the SEC there will be cartwheels in the SEC office because you know they're going to get three other teams in.
Right. Well, what about the other team that thought they were in? What happened last week in Norman? I mean, I was able to keep up with it a little bit, but I mean, we're in the meantime watching that four overtime game. So I mean, that was probably as unexpected as anything we've seen from Alabama in a long, long time.
It was remarkable how much they lacked enthusiasm and the lack of effort that existed. I mean, it was like they didn't care, and it was everybody on that roster. And I go back to, there was an interception on a bubble screen supposed to go to Ryan Williams, and I think it was Kobe Prentice was supposed to block, and Prentice didn't even try to block, and Ryan Williams didn't even try to go after the ball, and then they didn't try to tackle the guy that intercepted. It's like, do you guys even care? And it looked, and I think they've checked out, and I don't know why that is. Because in this day and age, I don't think there's any blueprint to keeping a team together, right? Especially if you're a first-year coach taking over for Nick Saban. But, I mean, it looks like they've just packed it in. And that's very surprising considering, the veteran leadership that exists on that team. And, I think that's the genesis of it. But, again, it goes back to something we've talked about a lot with that Alabama team. They've lacked discipline all year. They've tuned out their coaching staff at times. It just seems like a poorly run operation. Which, okay, if you go 9-3, if they beat Auburn and go 9-3, first year if things are kind of okay, fine. You get a mulligan, but they looked so poorly coached all year, and that just can't sit well.
Yeah, that being said, they're still extremely talented, and they've been hearing all this week as well. I mean, Auburn obviously now has they finally have, something that they feel is positive from the way they played. They've been close. They finally win last week, and they're feeling like they can play with anybody as they head to Tuscaloosa tomorrow.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's something we've talked about for the first, month and a half of the season. They had some of the best stats of any, national championship contender. They were 2-5, right, because they kept turning the ball over. Well, once they put it together, like they did last week, and like we've seen at times, throughout the year, they're a pretty darn good football team. So I think if they can build off that and keep that momentum going and find a way to use all those receivers in a variety of different ways, which I think has been awesome to see how those guys have come along. They can compete with anybody and certainly a broken Alabama team, which is, I think, clearly what they are at this point.
So what are you expecting? You think the door's open for what would be? I mean, in a rivalry that has not endured, especially over the last 20 years or so, you've had a double-digit favorite. But you don't usually see the those games all that close. You're thinking it's a tight football game throughout tomorrow in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah, I think it'll be a tight game. I think it'll be kind of ugly, old school, slow, plodding. And I think Auburn will have a chance. In the fourth quarter, I don't think they'll get the job done. Would I be surprised if I'm wrong? No. I think it's going to be a four quarter battle. It wouldn't surprise me if Auburn has a chance with the ball late, with a chance to win or tie and send it to overtime. Like I said, I think that's a broken Alabama team, and Auburn's got some momentum. And you guys know how it is. It's in that one, it's almost like the fear of losing outweighs the joy of winning. And
almost.
If you're Alabama, you got to fucker up a little bit more than normal based on how things have gone the last half of the season.
Yeah, that's very well said there, Barrett. Going to be you should be toasty at least there in the box tonight for Georgia and Tech.
I stepped outside and my hand's like an ice cube now, and it's not even sunset yet.
Athens is cold, man. I'm telling you. Yeah. I don't know why Sanford Stadium is so dang cold in November. I mean, been there quite a few times.
And
I
tell you what, for those watching tonight, the wind is going straight through the open end of the end zone. I mean, you're talking about the two flags are just flat out like crisp right now. So it's going to be an interesting one.
That's great. Well, enjoy that. We really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Let everybody know what all you've got coming up here on all your different venues.
Yeah, we're going to have columns on Outkick from the game tonight, and then whatever happens tomorrow. College football smothered and covered, of course, Saturday night late, and then SiriusXM Sunday morning. Myself and Tom Luganville babysitting everybody. And hey, you know what? Sunday is firing day, and it's also transfer portal day. So we should be busy.
Oh, yeah, that'll be great. Thanks again, Barrett. Looking forward to it all.
Thanks, y'all.
Barrett Talley joining us, as he does on Fridays. Yeah, he is there in Athens for Georgia, Georgia Tech. Meanwhile, Ole Miss leading Mississippi State at the half, 17-14. We're back with more. We'll open up the phone lines. Come on in and join us here on the Friday Drive.
Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into the Friday Drive. Bill, Dan, and Don here in the studio, and we'd love for you to join in. Give us your thoughts on the Iron Bowl tomorrow, on anything going on. I mean, we've got, as I said, college and pro football. Raiders and Chiefs are 17-16 Raiders. Early in the fourth quarter.
We were just talking during the commercial break about Travis Hunter, who I think is going to win the Heisman Trophy. I mean, looking at
Think he is too.
I mean, I guess a quarterback could have a pair of superhuman performances, you know, tonight, and then win a conference championship game and suddenly make that race a little bit more interesting. I don't even know who that would be. Carson Beck, you know, if he had like two awesome. Quinn Ewers. Maybe if Quinn Ewers had two, I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if there's really a quarterback, Cam Ward. You know, is there someone who could suddenly insert? I don't know. But Travis Hunter, looking like after this remarkable season at Colorado, he's going to finish his college football career with a Heisman Trophy. I have no idea at the NFL level. We were just talking about it during the break with Coach Dunn. Mm-hmm. You know, as far as this guy could be a best in the NFL corner. You know, a top tier shutdown corner immediately. You get the sense his potential is pretty unlimited at wide receiver. If you wanted to do that and focus just on that, like I would. I don't know if there's a wrong answer. You know, maybe, you know, trying to make him, I don't know, a defensive tackle or something is probably not the. No. You know, but I'd say if
he could probably play it.
I mean, give him a year, right? But
need to buck up a little.
Give him a couple of months, but it's. I think he's a remarkable, remarkable player and somebody. I just don't remember ever having this conversation before where it's like
no, you're right. Done. I mean, what he has done this year, he's had four or five games where he had a touchdown reception and an interception in the same game.
There have been,
he did it again today.
I think it was
the fifth time this year.
Wow. Really high level high school receivers and defensive backs where you have this conversation about. What are they at the
next level.
College level? Coach, I saw Antonio Cromartie play high school ball at Lincoln, but back in Tallahassee, and that was a guy I watched thinking, okay, well, if he wanted to just play corner for the next couple of years, he'll probably be one of the best corners in college football by the end of it. If he wants to just play receiver for the next couple of years, he'll probably be the end of it. And corner ended up winning out for Cromartie.
Yeah.
I wonder if corner ends up winning out for Travis Hunter too. Maybe special. He's a circumstantial player offensively, but a guy who's always out there as your number one shutdown corner. And if he can do that for a couple of seasons at a high level, he'll be a superstar at that level. I mean, and well worth the first overall pick in next year's draft.
Oh, yeah, I think so. And that's my feeling, is that that's sort of the way that it seems like things usually go. Is that what you do? He could be, used on occasion on offense, but be more of an every down guy on defense.
I think he would need to want to make the decision to give defense up, right? Like if he wanted to do the other way, he would say, all right, well, I'm going to focus just on being – because I just think it would be really difficult for him to be a receiver who occasionally plays defense.
Yes.
Right? Like if his thinking is, I'm going to focus on being a receiver, but occasionally I'll go out there when the team needs me.
Let me ask you, Don. I mean, how much more difficult would it be? I mean, it seems like if you can run routes, you can run routes. Mm-hmm. But you need to understand what the defensive game plan is every week more than you do the offensive game plan if you're a receiver as compared to a corner.
Right, you're exactly right. There's a lot more pressure. There's a lot more, assignment-wise, route recognition, coverages, blitzing, all that on defense where you, like you said, you just run a route for this play or this play. Now, what I would think that he would possibly be a defensive player, and like Dan said, they would have packages for him on offense in certain situations if they want to do that or if he wants to do that. But it'll be interesting. But I do think he's going to be a favorite for the Heisman, which, by the way, is what, just a couple weeks, right? Mm-hmm. So some of these guys still have games, which I always thought, is that fair? Why not have it later? But, you know, that's the way it's always been. I think the second weekend in December.
Yeah, it's usually the Saturday night after conference championship.
Yeah, the Army-Navy game.
While, let's see, recruiting has just wrapped up. It's a short signing period will have wrapped up. The transfer portal is about to open up. So, yeah, that'd be something else in there.
But it's one thing. It's one thing to be coaching in some, you know, desolate bowl game in the middle of December trying to recruit at the same time. It's another thing to be in your suit, New York City, next to a Heisman finalist or something.
Yeah, pretty good recruiting.
Yeah, that tends to be. I remember it was, and this is going way back, but when LaDainian Tomlinson was a Heisman finalist from TCU, Francione had just taken the Alabama job and I guess rubbed some people the wrong way because he used Tomlinson's Heisman appearance or the ceremony to do some pro-Alabama recruiting.
Well, he ended up rubbing plenty of people the wrong way in Tuscaloosa,
including, I think, folks noticed that he may have been rocking the Alabama tie sitting next to Tomlinson, you know, when he's there for the, those sorts of things. I don't know. Like, I remember it, but these, you know, these subtle little details and things, you know, these things matter. But that's a, recruiting's, I mean, it's the next couple of days, Coach, as we get ready for the early signing period.
Unbelievable.
I mean, this is a crazy, you know, you're on the crazy train right now.
And this game tomorrow is very important for that in-state.
Well, let's look at it this way. Look, Auburn is a solid underdog, and if they lose, that's sort of what it's expected. If Auburn wins tomorrow in Tuscaloosa, I don't know that I can remember there being a situation at Alabama that would have seemed as desolate, as desperate as this. I think Auburn would go ahead and wrap up. I mean, they already have. They're gonna have an outstanding recruiting class, and they're gonna dominate the state of Alabama. Alabama is still ranked ahead of Auburn in almost every recruiting service. But they're not bringing the Alabama kids in. I think they would lose a lot of players, and Auburn would go ahead and wrap up the in-state dominance in recruiting this year. And that's what Don talked about Nick Saban doing early on at Alabama.
You're one of the leading experts on this sort of thing, Bill, so I'll ask. Like, if Alabama were to lose the Iron Bowl tomorrow, it would be as bad a loss in the Iron Bowl for an Alabama coach.
Since.
Thinking about, like, who took – I mean early – because there's the – I mean, do you go to the early 2000s, or is it further?
Mike Dubose and the fumble and resulting field goal that Auburn won. Probably, I mean, it was the end for him.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the end for Kalen DeBoer, but boy, there would be there would be some sharp criticism of him and people watching every single move and anything he does, they're going to be ready to jump all over.
Yeah, right? I would think the only big upset during the Tuberville streak, not to take anything away from a remarkable stretch where you beat Alabama six times in a row, but I think the upset in that one was the first one, right? Was it 02? The game that in Tuscaloosa that I think Auburn was going in with injured running backs and
9-0
and you pull off a 9-0 in a game that I think Auburn was I'm getting my years right, right? That's the – and then, yeah.
Yeah, I guess it was.
Yeah, and then 02.
Yeah, we lost here in 99 our first year. We won – no, it was 2000.
2000 was the –
2009 to nothing in the yeah. miserable sleet.
The ice – the sleet game yes. was yeah. 2000. 2002 was the Trey Smith.
Right.
2002 was Trey Smith. Right. Okay, yeah. yes.
And so, then they beat us here in 2001, and we were favored. And that's when Kellogg broke his collarbone early.
But Bama's favored in the 0-2 game too, aren't they? After the Auburn injuries and stuff, but I mean the Trey Smith thing kind of comes as
I think so.
A that's the two. Is that the two Robert Johnson touchdowns?
Yes.
Is the is 2002? Yes. Yeah. Like, I mean, and that's. I mean, those. Are, but those are compared to
Cooper think, Wallace playing fullback.
Compared yeah. to compared
17
to
17-7. Yeah,
there you go. Compared to 03 and 04 and 05 and 06 and 07, I think, which is you know that's a more or less a down period for Alabama. But I mean, those are. Yeah, I mean, so I don't know if any of those games were as crushing for the opposing coach as yeah being a big favorite tomorrow. We'll see what happens.
We'd love for you to join us. Give us your thoughts. What do you think is going to happen tomorrow? Anything you want to talk about sports wise? We'll get to our final break of hour number one here on the Friday Drive.
For loving expert care for your pets, visit Moores Mill Animal Hospital, located at 2120 Moores.
1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Friday afternoon. Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio. Love for you to join in. What do you think about the Iron Bowl tomorrow? We've talked about it a little bit. We'll get into it even more, but let's go ahead. I mean, Auburn right now, I just have to feel, Don, that Alabama's got more pressure on them than Auburn does.
No doubt. No doubt. The way they played last week, Alabama – I watched some of that game. I was, like everyone else, I was very shocked. Not that Oklahoma won, but the way in which they went about
right.
it. They beat their
tails. It wasn't a fluke.
And the effort was just, I don't know what was going on. But anyway, yeah, there is so much pressure right now, and even if they don't know it, if that makes sense. These guys have never been in the Iron Bowl, the coaches I'm talking about at Alabama. It is different. It's home. There's so much pressure on them. And the way they played last week, Auburn's got to be feeling confident, feeling good about themselves, nothing to lose attitude. And, yeah, I think you're right, Bill. There is so much pressure on that staff and the players at Alabama. Don't think they don't read all this stuff, too.
I would think that the first few minutes of the ball game are extremely important because that crowd. Look, the crowd's going to be Alabama. They're going to have the elephant roar.
Oh, yeah.
And all,
they're
going to
have Joe Namath.
I mean, everything. But things need to go well. If Auburn can withstand
the first punches,
the first couple of possessions.
Yep.
And can at least have if it be close to a stalemate, then they've got a good chance. If they could do something early, positive. That crowd is going to be quick to turn.
Oh yeah, no doubt. And then you start doubting yourself as a coach and a player, and it can just snowball.
I asked Barrett if the game was going to be like if he was thinking it's a game that's still close in the fourth quarter for a reason, because I think that decides what kind of football game we're talking about here. If it's a game where Alabama is solidly ahead, at halftime. You wonder if Auburn's going to really make a push, right, to get back in this thing. If this is a game where, like the two near upsets in the Iron Bowl recently, if Auburn can build the early lead and force Alabama to have to scramble to get back in the game, that's sort of a different thing. And I feel like you're being a prisoner of the moment thinking that just because Auburn won on Saturday right. and Oklahoma handily beat Alabama in Norman that – Alabama's gonna play another, another really close game or disappoint. Like
they're unbeaten at home.
Yeah.
I mean they have really struggled on the road.
I'm thinking I'm thinking close game Alabama maybe by a score.
That's the way I went in Brian's pick.
Yeah, what'd you say?
27-20.
I said 30-24. Like it's similar sort of. I mean, yeah, it's sort of where
I just I'd be a little disappointed. I mean, Alabama can do it, but you hope that the Auburn defense can hold them under 30. I think that gives Auburn a shot.
Is there a number where I told you, hey, Alabama scores X?
I think 30 is going to make it tough, really tough for Auburn. I think Auburn needs to hold him to 24 or less.
Okay.
And that could be really, really tough. I guess when Jalen Milroe gets going, oh, man, he is really, really hard to handle.
That was going to be my question. Is there a number where if I told you Alabama was held to this many points, what's the highest number you would go where I would tell you, hey, Alabama was held to this many, and you think that means Auburn's got a great shot of winning the game?
24, but then 24? What did I say last week about A&M? Of course, yeah. I didn't count in that they're going to go four overtimes, which would give you another 10, 12 points.
I would say, as crazy as it sounds, I think if you told me Alabama finished this game tomorrow with 24 points on the nose,
I think Auburn's got a really, really good shot.
If you told me, knowing nothing else about the game, I think it would almost be a disappointment. It would feel like a missed opportunity if you held this Alabama team to 24 in Tuscaloosa and couldn't get it done. Now if it's... Yeah, if it's on the wrong side of 30, right? Like then you're talking about like if you told me Alabama finished with 37, like I don't love Auburn's chances.
I'd say Alabama probably covers.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. So I think the closer, the more Auburn and that's got to start with a couple of early. That's got to start with success on because if Alabama's got 21 at the end of the first, you're probably not holding them to 20.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, we're halfway done. David Paschal joins us from Chattanooga in hour number two. You can as well. We'd love to have you here on the Friday edition of The Drive.
Hey, this is Jacob Goins, host of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 and Abby Award-winning voice of the Auburn High Tigers. When I'm looking for a quick and delicious lunch or a high-quality sit-down dinner, Acre Restaurant is my go-to spot in Auburn. From the amazing starters and snacks like the pimento cheese or the fried okra basket to a lighter lunch option like the strawberry candied walnut salad, you can be like me and order my go-to entree for lunch, the Pepper Jack Fried Chicken Sandwich. Bread and butter pickles, pit-smoked bacon, jalapeno, mayo with their house brioche bun and french fries. And you better not leave without having a slice of their famous peanut butter pie. Acre Restaurant in Auburn is a perfect lunch option for a guy like me who needs a quick, delicious meal before I get back to the studio. You can check out Acre's lunch, dinner, or brunch menus on their website at acreauburn.com. And the best part? You don't need a reservation. You can just come on by. So the next time you need a delicious meal at lunchtime, take a visit to my friends at Acre in Auburn and tell them that Jacob Goins sent you.
I'm Jessica Samuel with Opelika Power Services. Opelika Power is committed to delivering the highest level of service and value to our customers. We are devoted to meeting the needs of our customers through safe, reliable, and affordable delivery of electricity to the home. We're proud to serve you. Please visit our website for more information about the benefits of public power. We thank you for your business.
888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome in to hour number two here on the Friday Drive. Friday evening, going to be a cold one. I'm not even going to say chilly. It is going to be cold tonight, sub-freezing.
Ooh.
The temperatures have been dropping, I mean, since early this morning. Got up early this morning, it was like 55. Mm-hmm. By mid-morning, it was like in the low 50s, and it's been dropping all day.
I brought it back with me. I packed a little bit of that Alaska chill in the suitcase, and hopefully it's not going to be. But we talked about it, Bill. I mean, it was getting well into well into November, it felt like it was still pretty temperate.
It was very mild.
Yeah, I mean, especially very mild. And that is not the that's
no,
not.
It is. As a matter of fact, I did something that I forgot. I did not do last year. We've got a few bird baths and things. Mm-hmm. One of them is one that has a solar light in it. It's glass. It's got painted, and it was mm-hmm. really nice. Mm-hmm. Until it froze last year. I didn't think about it. It's like, oh, that's cool. Look, look, it's frozen. And then it thawed a little bit. And, yeah, the glass was in bunches of pieces. So I dumped that out today, dumped the water out of it today. I don't know if things are going to freeze, because sometimes when it's breezy, it won't freeze. Yeah, but it's going to be cold.
Oh, yeah. It's 48 right now.
Have you got duty tonight?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to wear my long pants. Usually I don't.
Yeah, I mean, Don is wearing long pants, and he's got a long T-shirt.
That's the first.
Underneath the T-shirt. So yeah, I can tell Don is prepared for some cold weather this evening.
I've got an early bus ride to the Delta tomorrow, Coach. But mm-hmm. if I'm out and about tonight, I'll see if I can drop off some black coffee for you.
That'd be great. Thank you.
It's Bill, Dan, Coach Don Dunn here in the studio on this Friday. And, yes, we normally have him on Thursdays, but yesterday, hopefully everybody had an opportunity to spend time with their family yesterday on Thanksgiving. We're thankful that David Paschal from the Chattanooga Times Free Press and Sport Talk on WGOW has a little time for us here on this Black Friday. Hey, David, how you doing today?
Bill, Dan, Don, I'm doing wonderful. Hope all of y'all are as well.
Oh, yes.
Doing
great.
I mean,
the sweatpants stretched just fine yesterday. So everything's going fine. We've got quite a bit of catching up to do. When we last spoke last week, it looked like, the SEC was in great shape to get four teams for sure into the college football playoff. Now they're really scrambling, trying to figure out how they're going to get more than three.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of a worst case scenario for Greg Sankey. You know, I think last week it was the debate was there was a lot of debate up here, especially with Tennessee being the first team on the outside in mm-hmm. Indiana with that schedule or lack thereof, because it was 106th in the country going into last week's game against Ohio State. And so the big talking point a week ago was it going to be this nice and neat four Big Ten teams, four SEC teams, or was Tennessee going to take Indiana's spot after a bad loss to Ohio State and you'd have five SEC and three Big Ten? Well, you certainly had Florida have something to say about that, and you definitely had Oklahoma have something to say about that. So, you know, it does get kind of – when you think how we all act toward the NCAA basketball tournament, you know, you'll get a basketball team that's 18-13 and they get left out, and you're just kind of like, well, you know something, they had their chances. And now, you know, even as strong as the SEC is, you know, when you have that third loss, you just really lose a lot of bargaining power.
If the first team out is a 9-3 SEC team, I'm going to have a hard time, you know, weeping too much about it, David. You know what I mean? I'll almost feel like I will almost think that the system works if the first team out is, and if there are no 9-3 teams in the field, if you're talking about South Carolina, Ole Miss, and Alabama as teams that finish 9-3 and miss the field of 12, I'll think, you know, I know folks will use that as evidence that it should be 14 or 16. I'll think that that's evidence that you got a pretty good system right now.
You know, and there are going to be teams that get in, and then you're just kind of like, because the NCAA basketball tournament has it every year, and you're just like, well, they got an at-large bid, and they're really nothing special. You've got the same thing this year with teams that really just haven't. I mean, the fact that Indiana, you know, going back to them, you know, their one big game, they lost 38-15. You know, and again, this is just, I've said it countless times, I loathe conference realignment, but it's left us with where we are. You've just got a lot of teams in the league, a lot of the better teams in the league that don't play one another. I mean, it's crazy to kind of think of, you know, if Texas A&M, I have people tell me, why is Tennessee already eliminated from the SEC championship? How come they can't get in it? And it's because if Texas – or Texas A&M win, they would have especially if Texas A&M wins, you'd have a four-way tie at 6-2. Texas A&M would have a win over a team that's in the tie. Mm-hmm. Georgia would have a win over a team that's in the tie because Georgia beat Tennessee and Texas A&M beat Texas. And that's it. That's how you determine it.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter how many they played. It's just the record, the winning percentage of those teams in there. And there's no way around that. I mean, when you've got a 16-team league and everybody's obviously not playing everybody else.
And and we've talked about this. To me, the most disheartening thing is the fact that with what the committee has shown, I don't see the SEC ever moving toward 9 games. Why would it? And again, this is the thing. It's conference realignment and it's this playoff that are dictating everything. I mean, we have just gone through a regular season where Alabama and Mississippi State, the two closest schools in the league, went without playing each other for the first time since World War II. I mean, I would have really loved to have seen the way South Carolina's playing. I would have loved to have seen South Carolina play the closest team it's to in the league, but they didn't get a chance to play Georgia. So, I mean, I hate that the regionality of the SEC is being lost, and goodness knows the pain that's coming if they stick at 8 and they adopt that 1-7 model, and you've got an Alabama-Tennessee game and an Auburn-Georgia game twice every 4 years. That, to me, is what just kills me over this whole thing.
I keep talking to Auburn people that are sort of in denial about the fact that something pretty drastic is going to have to happen for Auburn-Georgia to stay on the schedule in 2026 as it stands right now, because you're looking at the SEC not really moving. If anything, I don't know if you saw Chris Klieman's remarks earlier this week from Kansas State. He thinks that there's going to be a pretty significant push within the Big 12 to go back to 8 conference games, because you're seeing 9-2 Big 12 teams that have lost conference games to each other or have lost out of conference games not being considered for the playoff. And he's thinking we might need to go outside the league and prove ourselves more and or stop beating each other up with an extra conference game if that's not the accepted standard within the industry.
Well, and of course that could happen as soon as, I fully think in a couple of years we're going to be talking about a 14-team tournament where the SEC champ gets a bye and the Big Ten champ gets a bye, and all the other leagues have to deal with it. I mean, that's what's so sad about where we are, is just the greed and the power that's being shown by two conferences. And heck, I'm a graduate of one of those conferences. I've got kids that go to school in one of those conferences. But I mean, it is just unfortunate because the Big 12 is sitting there without. I mean, it is amazing that you can have a Big 12 without a brand name.
And
there's just not a brand name in the Big 12. There's not a team that moves the television meter.
Yeah, they ought to change it just to the 12.
Kansas basketball, but I mean, that's not really what we're talking about.
That's right.
Not in football. I love the Big 12 in basketball. Yes. I think the Big 12's been the top to bottom best league for a while in basketball. Now the SEC's off to a fabulous start with its non-conference wins, but yeah, I mean, the SEC has 16 members and 11 of them can claim national championships. The Big 12, TCU won back in the 1930s, and then BYU won one in 1984, and that's it.
Mm. Wow, that is crazy to think about, but you're right. You're absolutely right. Well, you look at the
closest thing they got is the UCF perfect season from a couple of years ago.
Oh my. I still regret. I spent money on our entire family going down there. Of course, it's just to Atlanta to that Peach Bowl. And they sat there and watched Auburn lose to UCF. And I was just like, yeah, our kids were really little. And I had to explain how sometimes teams can be disinterested when you've had the November that Auburn had, whipping up on Georgia and whipping up on Alabama and then losing the rematch to Georgia. It kind of takes it out of you.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. So what – what kind of explanation have you heard that makes sense for Alabama's apparent disinterest last week in Norman?
That was just strange. Of course, you had the Deontay Lawson go out. That was a big blow. And I will say, I mean, Oklahoma does have a nice defense.
Yes, they do.
I mean, I went out there and watched Tennessee, and, Tennessee was able to capitalize early and then just kind of, sat on that lead because they know how dangerous Oklahoma's defense can be. And, and it's just one of those Milrow, there was a horrible blocking on the perimeter on one of those throws to where, the guy saw it all along and picked it. And then Milrow throws the next one ill-advised, and 10-3 became 24-3 in just in a heartbeat. And, you know, you probably hear it at Auburn, and I certainly hear it up here with Tennessee and Georgia fans. There's this, you know, thought that, oh, Alabama just went in doubt. They're going to get all the calls. Well, they got hosed early in that fourth quarter as bad as any call you'll ever see. Yeah. And I still haven't heard an explanation for that.
There isn't one. I mean, there's not a reasonable explanation for it.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you know, and who knows? I mean, that makes it 24-10. You've still basically got the fourth quarter left. I don't know how much it would have changed it or not, but that was just a head-scratcher of a call that just pretty much sealed that one.
Yeah, and I mean, so that's good for Brent Venables. He gets to 6 wins, as does Billy Napier. What a turnaround it has been for the Gators, and now they're just, you know, absolutely chomping at the bit to get the Seminoles tomorrow.
Yeah, who would have thought FSU would damage their strength of schedule at the beginning of the year? But no, I think Florida's been a neat story. And I think we've kind of talked about this, too. I mean, I think it's just one of those deals that, from what I've heard, the people that I know down at Florida, they're just like, you know, a lot of their boosters, instead of saying, hey, let's pay $26 million to buy out Billy Napier, they're saying, let's take half of that and let's see what we can do in NIL money to try to build a really nice team around DJ Lagway. So, you know, Billy Napier played high school ball at Murray County, which is about, you know, 45 minutes down the road from where I am here in Chattanooga, you know, and then went on to Furman. Just a very likable guy. And you saw his interview after the game, and just him holding back the emotion and stuff like that. You can tell the players really like him, and that this means a lot to him. And I'm tickled that he's had this kind of late season success. Here's a stat for you, because I know you love this stuff. Of the 16 SEC teams, 14 have recorded top 15 wins this year. Mississippi State and Missouri are the only teams that do not have top 15 wins this year. Everybody's got one in the league except Texas. Of those 14, Texas beat Michigan when Michigan was number 10, you know, the second week of the season. But every team in the league this year overall has a top 15 win, except for Miss State and Mizzou.
Well, what do you think of Texas's and I guess not a top 15 win, because A&M is outside, but do you think they've – I mean, that game tomorrow
– I like A&M's chances against Texas.
I like A&M as a team. We were talking about this earlier in the show, David. A&M needs to win both of these games to make the playoff. And you don't say that about – Texas doesn't have to win tomorrow to make the playoff. And Georgia doesn't have to win the SEC championship game to make the playoff. And that makes A&M an exceedingly dangerous team in my eyes.
Oh, it absolutely does. I like Texas A&M in College Station. Mm-hmm. My favorite stat about this game this week is when you think about the situation at Vanderbilt and you think what's riding on it for Tennessee. And that's the noon ABC game, noon Eastern game. You know, that place, because of construction, only seats 29,000 people. So you would think tickets for this thing are at a premium, and they are. And the cheapest ticket to the Tennessee-Vandy game tomorrow is $260. But you understand that because there are only 29,000 people that can get to this thing. All right, on the other hand, tomorrow night, Kyle Field is going to have about 109,000 people at that thing. And the cheapest ticket, I'm looking right now on StubHub, the cheapest ticket right now per person, $645.
I was going to guess five, but yeah, that doesn't surprise me. They have, you know, this game hasn't been played in what, 12, 13 years.
Right, since 2011.
Yep.
Wow.
So, I mean, it and everything is riding on it for Texas A&M. So yeah,
it is, and you think about it, Bill. You think about the fact that, I mean, how brutal for Texas A&M. Well, one, I mean, we all know that Texas A&M got totally blindsided 3 years ago at Media Days, where they found out just like everybody else that Oklahoma and Texas were coming. Mm-hmm. You know, Texas A&M, every addition in the league, you know, has had the right to, you know, to listen to these other. Like Clemson, you know, South Carolina wouldn't want Clemson in, so Clemson's not in. Florida wouldn't want FSU in, so they're not. But it didn't matter with Texas. I mean, they steamrolled Texas A&M and got in this league. And how brutal would it be if you're Texas A&M after the way all this has transpired, if Texas gets in the championship the first year and you would now be 0-13 getting in the thing.
Yeah, that is right. It's I think home underdogs. We saw it last week, with Florida and Auburn and Oklahoma, and we'll see this week. Now I don't know about Vandy and Tennessee. I think it's been a great year for Clark Lee and Vandy, but they're sputtering down the stretch.
No, you're exactly right, and Auburn was the perfect example of that. Auburn just couldn't capitalize. I think Auburn held Vandy to like 227 yards. That's their fewest, but. Yes, down the stretch they've been, and the other thing that I noticed, and Clark Lee even touched on this in Baton Rouge the other night, Diego Pavia, 12 games now into the year, is really beat up. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they only ran him 6 times in Baton Rouge. Now, those 6 times got like 41, 43 yards, something like that, but you can tell they are kind of easing back on him a little bit to try to get him to today, or tomorrow, I should say, but I think... I like the way Tennessee matches up with Vanderbilt. I know that, when you're Tennessee and you've got this much on the line, you've just got to give it to Dylan Sampson as much as you can. I mean, the guy had a 30 carry game against Mississippi State for 149, 150 yards. I think you're going to see something similar. Tennessee has been a very slow starting team in conference play. And they really haven't scored much in conference play. Right. Mississippi State, they scored 33. That's the most they've scored. So I think it'll be like a 27-13 type of game. But I like the depth that Tennessee has defensively, where they've got a lot of bodies in case Pavia can start, getting loose and stuff like that. I don't think Tennessee would get tired out. And I think Tennessee will just try to run all over.
That's one of the early starts along with, there's some really interesting games right off the bat. South Carolina Clemson, another noon Eastern, and both of these teams, South Carolina is really hoping that some things fall, because I feel like right now they're the best 3-loss team in the SEC. Clemson still obviously is looking to try to get into the playoffs as well. I mean, I think this one's a really interesting game, but, man, South Carolina has really been playing well down the stretch.
I agree, and I mean, you've seen the last couple of years. Clemson last year won in Columbia. South Carolina 2 years ago won in Clemson. So I don't think either team is fearing, the other team's venue. Clemson's weird. They're hard to get a read on. I mean, I know they had the Georgia game at the beginning of the year that they lost 34-3, and I don't really know if they've done anything since then to kind of wow you. They've just kind of taken care of most everybody in the ACC. And to your point, South Carolina is playing fantastic. I mean, I love Sellers at QB. I love Sanders at running back. Those two guys are both loathed to try to bring down. So I went with South Carolina. I know they're the I guess that's being viewed as a mild, that would be viewed as a mild upset, but I'm kind of like you. I just think they've got the stronger team right now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, defensively, they are scary good defensively. And then the Louisville Kentucky game. Who would have thought? I mean, this is what a disappointing season this has been for the Wildcats and Mark Richt.
Oh, Mark Stoops, yes.
Mark Stoops. Oh, what a,
yeah,
Mark
and it includes the top 10 road win back in late September.
Against their only conference win in Oxford.
Wow.
Yes. And, of course, you've got the dynamic that Cutter Bowley, the freshman, he's the Kentucky's first true freshman to ever start in this rivalry game. It is at Kroger Field, so that's certainly, a comfortable setting to break a guy in. But, because it's going to be interesting to see how Kentucky handles this, because they've had a bowl streak for 8 years in a row that's now come to an end. And so they've got to put all their eggs into this one. But what happens if that first bad break goes against them? I just kind of think Louisville's a slightly better team. So I went with Louisville winning in Lexington.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, Oklahoma LSU, I don't –
feels like it's going to be an uncomfortable offseason for Brian Kelly.
It does.
I'm not saying he's losing his job. I don't know if anybody's willing to make that jump.
$60 million is way, way too much to pay.
But just a an unusually frosty offseason in Baton Rouge.
The possibility of LSU being a five-loss team.
That stole a couple of wins.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those where you look at that, and LSU's just had a brutal November, and I would guess if you had to ask the fans, what's been the worst part of November? I mean, they might say the Underwood flip. I mean, that might be worse than losing to getting humiliated by Bama like they did. But kind of wild that this is the first trip that Oklahoma has ever taken to Tiger Stadium. I mean, I know it was their first to Jordan-Hare too, but this is their first to Tiger Stadium. I think LSU, you know, being at home, you know, how does Oklahoma do? Are their heads still in the sky after what they did to Bama?
Right.
I think LSU kind of gets right here. I picked LSU 31-20 in this one.
There's a lot of talent on the field for a game with two unranked teams, right? You think about that. There's not top 25 matchup between Oklahoma and LSU. At the end of the season,
and then wanted to get your thoughts on the Iron Bowl. I mean, Auburn finally got over the hump. They were able to win one of those ball games that they've been in so many times. Alabama just absolutely laying an egg in Norman coming back home. I feel like there's more pressure on Alabama than there is on Auburn, but they're so talented.
They are, and of course the key for Auburn keeping this, you know, a one possession game in the fourth quarter is, you know, the turnovers that plagued them so often early in the year that they've definitely done a better job with lately. I fear if I'm Auburn, I fear of a really angry Alabama that's going to come out and want to try to prove something. You know, if Auburn can withstand the early first few minutes of this game, you know, they could hang, but I think it's one of those that may stay close for a little bit, but like a late Alabama touchdown gives them a two touchdown win, something like that. It is such a amazing stat that Alabama has never defeated Auburn in Tuscaloosa without Nick Saban as its head coach, which is incredible.
Now, I did have a couple of people jump and go, but wait. Remember, he wasn't able to coach, and Sark,
right.
Sark was the interim coach.
Sark got the one in the COVID year, but I mean, they made real sure that they said, no, this win is being credited to Nick Saban. That is not an interim win.
David, we really appreciate you spending some time with us as we shift the schedule around here for Thanksgiving. Are you headed? To Nashville? Nashville tomorrow.
Yeah, heading to Nashville first thing. I was going to say at the very beginning, though, this is just kind of your typical Thanksgiving week, right? Auburn wins the Maui championship, and everybody just sits back and enjoys it.
Oh yeah, yeah, that's right. It's typical Iron Bowl week that we spent so much time talking basketball, but rightfully so with this team.
Hey, and I guess you probably saw the stat too that because I think it was Auburn's basketball account may have tweeted it out. When in the last 25 years, only two players in the NBA, WNBA, college basketball, women's basketball have scored 145 plus points, 90 plus rebounds, 20 plus assists, and 20 plus blocks. Tim Duncan about 23 years ago, and Janai Broome now.
There was another stat shared, and it's the same organization had one where, and it's so odd to see, like, oh yeah, between the NBA and the WNBA, right, and you know all these, you know, where you'd have like a stat where it's like Janai Broome and Lisa Leslie were the only two people, you know, you'd have something like that. It was like, what? But then it's there was another one where it's like it was Broome and Shaq.
Shaq. Yeah.
I think it had been the only two people in like 3 days.
And I wonder, did anybody ever find out, did the Lakers play three games, or was that just two games in 3 days?
Maybe a playoff, you know, maybe in a playoff,
three games in 3 days?
That's a big talk. But David, the Auburn's never had a National Player of the Year recipient in men's basketball from one of the major organizations. Janai Broome making that kind of push.
Yeah, I mean, and you can tell he has developed, and I know Justin knows this stuff backwards and forwards the way he watches them every game, but Broome has this new shot this year with either hand from like 6 to 8 feet where it's just kind of like a mini
little
Jabbar
push.
Sky hook.
Yeah.
It doesn't have a lot of loft to it. It goes straight to the basket, and it's just bottom of the net.
I call it the shot put.
Gives
the shot put ball a little
great touch with it. He really does. Yeah.
Yeah, no, they've been a treat to watch for sure. And you think about a different world. The KenPom rankings, the last time I checked, had Auburn number one and Tennessee number two. So Tennessee's off to an incredible start. They just don't have the nearly as many resume wins. But think about Tennessee. They've beaten Virginia, Louisville, and one other, Baylor. Baylor was ranked, and Tennessee has led by 26 points in all seven of their games so far this year. 26.
Wow. Yeah, as you said, it's a great start. Great start for the SEC here early on. David, again, we really appreciate you spending a little time with us. Have a good trip to Nashville. Good thing you've got that that early game, and we'll get back and we'll look forward to talking to you again next week.
All right, you guys have a wonderful weekend.
All right. David Paschal joining us, usually with us on
The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive. Final 25 minutes here on this Friday. Our thanks to David Paschal joining us from Chattanooga. As we've had David and Barrett Salih on today. If you missed any of the show, check out the podcast.
Podcasts of The Drive available wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Go to ESPNAU.com and use the Podcast Center or go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe, all that good stuff. Appreciate Southeastern Industrial Contractors for sponsoring the podcast and the text box, 334-564-1840. You can reach out to us on the text box if you want to jump in on the phone line.
Rivalry weekend. That can be tough to say.
Yes.
Rivalry weekend is underway.
Rivalry.
Rivalry. There's an L in there, I think. There's an L for half the teams that are playing. And you've got the Egg Bowl going on right now. And it started off high scoring, has really settled down.
Yeah.
All we've seen since before the midpoint of the second quarter is an Ole Miss field goal. 20-14, Ole Miss leading Mississippi State. I think this one fits into the rivalries as well. The Chiefs and Raiders.
Mm-hmm.
That's a pretty heated rivalry. It goes back.
This would be a crushing.
The Chiefs with a field goal to win it 19-17.
This would be a crushing loss for Ole Miss, right? I mean, what playoff chances they still have?
Yeah, I think they realize they don't have much of a playoff shot.
They don't. They would need chaos tomorrow, probably including an Auburn victory, mm-hmm. among other upsets. And then they would also probably need Georgia to win the SEC so that Ole Miss could say, well, we beat the SEC champion. We have a better resume than not just 9-3 teams, but even 10-2 teams.
Well, they would probably need – is there a Big 12 team that could win the championship with three losses? I mean, I'm just trying to think of
Kansas, well, Kansas State – well, but even still, I still think the Big 12 –
they'd be a conference champ.
Yeah, the Big 12 champion's getting in.
Now it looks like they're going to be in.
Ole Miss is going to need to be higher than the second ACC team.
Yeah,
Ole Miss
right.
is going to need a situation where they would need either Miami or SMU to lose tomorrow.
And
lose
in the championship game.
Yes, and they also probably need Clemson out of it.
Yep.
Although that would give South Carolina a win, so it's like it's really tough to
get Ole Miss in.
Well, if Ole Miss wins, because Ole Miss is ahead of South Carolina right now in the playoff rankings, so if Ole Miss wins,
would South Carolina move ahead of them if they beat Clemson?
If Ole Miss, well, I think Ole Miss wanted to look more impressive today
and
than they have thus far. If Ole Miss had beaten Mississippi State 45-0 or something, then you could have said, well, Ole Miss could jump Clemson. South Carolina beat Clemson, they could jump Clemson. And then if you had other ACC upsets, Syracuse beating Miami tomorrow, or the Cal SMU, I think is the game. Well, like if you had upsets in those games, that would open the door. But if the ACC is getting two in, then there probably isn't a spot for a 9-3 SEC team. Whether it's South Carolina, whether it's Ole Miss, whether it's Alabama, you need turmoil that knocks some of those teams out of the running. I mean, I guess Purdue beating Indiana would be in that mix too, but I don't think.
Yeah, that would probably knock them out.
But I don't.
They dropped to 10.
Yeah, they dropped to 10. So maybe like that's another upset that if you're one of these 9-3 SEC teams other than A&M, I mean, I know A&M's not 9. Like, you know what I mean? If you're one of these SEC teams that can get to 9-3 that wants to be in the playoff, the upsets you're looking for are those kind of games. Some of them feel real. And the idea that you're going to hit several of them.
Yeah.
Right, like you're going to hit that kind of parlay where it's like, yeah, you're going to get Syracuse beating Miami and Purdue beating Indiana and
and Auburn beating Alabama.
And Auburn beating Alabama. Like you're going to hit that. It's like, maybe. Like, I mean,
wow, what a wild day. I mean, we've seen some crazy ones. I mean, we said it last week.
Yeah.
Last week, it's like, well, it didn't look like there were that many big ball games. And then bam, 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 here you go in the SEC with three big upsets.
And none of those games feel – out of the question.
No. Individually.
You know, yeah, individually. I mean, yeah, so, but
it's exponentially more when you add, and you got to have that and the other.
Yeah, it's the difference between correctly guessing a coin flip and correctly guessing a coin flip 20 times in a row.
Right.
Or something like that. Like, let's see it hit that streak without, you know, without getting it wrong. So, yeah, maybe we have a final regular season Saturday where chalk holds. Maybe a couple of teams just absolutely make a big mess of a golden opportunity tomorrow as well. I feel like there's going to be a mixture of both.
Yeah, I mean, we will see. I mean, and yeah, it's that weekend that fan bases look forward to or dread every year. I mean, the big rivalries you got, as we mentioned, Ole Miss, Mississippi State's going on now. Mm-hmm. Georgia Tech coming up in about an hour.
Yeah.
You've got some big college basketball going on this weekend as well. Auburn and Duke is coming up on Wednesday. Duke plays tonight on ACC Network against I think Seattle is in Cameron Indoor. So if you wanted to watch Duke, I think it's their final game before welcoming in Auburn on Wednesday in a really big game in the SEC ACC showdown. Ole Miss is playing Purdue right now. I think that game is in one of the tournament. Championships
How's that one going?
Late in the first half, Purdue leads Ole Miss 25-13. Wow. Coming up on they just
13 points for Ole Miss
at the 8-minute break. Pretty good Purdue team. That game is that game is in San Diego as the Children's Invitational tournament goes on. You've got a lot of SEC teams in the top 25 as well. I know Mississippi State's got a game against Butler to win a tournament championship later today. So I think there could be if you're getting into college basketball mode, Auburn not in action again until Wednesday. They've earned a couple of days off though. I think that Auburn men's
they
enjoyed their time on the island, but I think they also made the absolute most of what they could do on the floor with some of the best basketball you've seen in the Bruce Pearl era.
Absolutely. I mean, Auburn is dominant in that tournament and now Duke. I mean, that's the thing. It's hard to imagine that they will revel too much in that when they've got a trip to Cameron coming up next week. I mean, that's the thing. That's if you want to try to and you've got as experienced a group as Auburn has with 10 seniors on that team, I would think that yes, they really will appreciate and enjoy that. But I would imagine that Bruce and the staff and the seniors making sure that they're preparing for Duke.
This is an ultra confident bunch, though. I mean, I think they just realized they played some teams on the floor in Hawaii that are as good as the Duke Blue Devils,
right,
in teams like Iowa State and North Carolina.
Again, it was in Maui, not in, you know.
But if any team is going to face down a home court advantage, right? It's going to be guys that have played this much college basketball, and it's going to be guys that are playing this confident, right? I mean, they're just, I mean, just the I think some folks who maybe don't watch all that much Auburn basketball that tuned into Maui were stunned by how confident this group is at all times. Like whether it's the bench energy, whether it's the willingness to play to the crowd a little bit after a big play, whether it's not just that, but also the way they were just winning their matchups over and over and over again to cause those celebrations. Like, I think it's a special group even among really good college basketball teams.
I think that we ought to talk a little bit, and I can't wait for our next opportunity to hear from Dylan. Dylan Cardwell is a guy that, and there was some talk about this during the broadcast on Wednesday, and then Bruce Pearl talking about it in the post game. You know, people were wondering, well, is it just sort of a favor to Dylan for coming back that Bruce is starting that big lineup with Dylan and Janai? And now you're seeing Dylan is not just a non-factor offensively anymore. I mean, he's not going to go 8 for 8 in every ball game, but, I mean, his presence around the basket and Janai's ability to take it away from the basket as well as to go in. I mean, they've shown something that this big lineup isn't just, oh, something you might see for a couple of minutes every few ball games. It's something they can employ and be very successful with against different opponents.
See, to me, if the favor would be that you're giving Janai minutes at the four, right?
Yeah.
The favor would almost be like if you're doing someone a favor by starting Dylan, it would be that you're giving Janai opportunities against the other team's starting lineup to show himself as a four, because you might not be using Janai as a four in crunch time, depending on how things play out at the end of games. But
we're seeing it now.
But you are, and to me, the really surprising thing is you thought if you played Janai and Dylan together, Janai's going to be your high post, Dylan's going to be your low post, mm-hmm. and teams can prepare accordingly. But when Dylan is effective in the high post, when Dylan can go to the top of the perimeter and make passes inside like he did in the final minute of the Iowa State game,
right,
to find the guard cutting to the basket, when he can hit the jump shot on the, you know, when he's
he
in
hit a three.
When he's in rhythm and can hit the open jump shot, that, because Janai is such a terror in the low post.
Oh, he is.
Right? And
he's almost unstoppable.
And if the thought that you're going to send your second best post player or an overmatched perimeter guy out there on Dylan to try to stop Dylan, either, now Dylan's going to put it on the ground and go to the basket, it's a little bit different, but when you're talking about Dylan being able to read and react and make the pass or hit the shot, if he can do that from the high post, it adds a wrinkle to this Auburn offense. You already knew Chaney could do some of that.
Right.
But I mean, the thought that you can interchange that with Dylan and Janai, you know, and we're seeing a little bit more Turtle Hudson too, as you know, Dylan's as Bruce's front court options open up. But the way Dylan played, I think opened some eyes to what he's able to do without the ball and what he's able to do with the ball.
Yeah. So I mean, that just adds to this team's flexibility and their ability to, you know, to beat you so many different ways. Update on the Egg Bowl. Ole Miss with a touchdown pass. They go for two, don't make it, but they're up 12 now, 26-14, with just under 10 minutes to play in regulation. So, ball games continue. I mean, there will be another upset or two this weekend,
Don.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. Rivalry week, stranger things have happened, but I look to see a couple upsets tomorrow. Good day to watch football.
Oh, you're not
starting
kidding.
Early, like you said. Clemson, them, I think at 11.
Those are 11 o'clock games.
Louisville, Kentucky's early.
You're on the smoker tonight, right?
You're smoking it tonight, and then get a little sleep in the morning, and then get ready to watch football all day.
Now you got to do some spritzing. Are you just monitoring temp?
I'm just doing the temperature tonight. Okay. Putting the meat on and watching it. It's harder at this time of year to keep that thing up. Because it gets cold like everybody.
Oh, absolutely!
Else.
It's fighting. I mean, you're fighting the elements to keep something like that at temp for hours on end.
That's right.
Yeah, the Tennessee Vandy.
Yeah, early.
South Carolina, Clemson, and Louisville,
wow,
Kentucky are all 11 o'clock games tomorrow.
That's going to be exciting.
Yeah. So we will see. And then, of course,
it would. You know what? A game we haven't really talked about as an. I mean, I think Tennessee with a loss to Vandy.
Ooh.
Could wind themselves.
Oh, they'd be back out.
I think they're in the back of the pack, and I think that, and incredibly, I think that
might help. Is that what you were about to say?
I think it opens the door for another 9-3 SEC team to jump Tennessee.
More than that combination. Mm-hmm. So maybe, Alabama, South Carolina, or Ole Miss.
If you're Ole Miss and you need an upset and maybe an Auburn and a Vandy upset or something mm-hmm. along those lines tomorrow to get into that mix because. The door's not closed. Now, a loss here, even a close loss here, and I feel like that might close the door because people, you know, it gets into score watching and beauty pageant and stuff. It Ole Miss, I feel like, is a stop and a score away from turning this one into a.
They are.
Turning this into a bigger.
I mean, Mississippi State is a turnover, and then you know Ole Miss is going to go for the jugular.
Yeah.
I mean, they can do that, win 34 or 41-14,
so,
and it
looks
like a blowout.
This Mississippi State drive down 12 with 10 minutes left, this is a big drive for playoff implications, right? Because if they – a stop and a score by Ole Miss – and suddenly Ole Miss is
looks better. Yeah. But if State goes down and scores and makes it 26-21, then it looks like, oh, they struggle again after their loss last week in Gainesville.
How many teams around the country are watching this drive and thinking our playoff chances are impacted by what happens over the next 2 or 3 minutes in Oxford?
You're right. I hadn't really thought about that. But, there's 9.5 minutes to go in the ball game, and Ole Miss is up by 12. And
we both thought it. We both thought that was it.
Ball was nearly picked. We'll get to our final break here on this Friday. Hey, look, you can join us as well, 334-321-1390. Give us your thoughts on the Iron Bowl or anything you want to talk about sports-wise here on the Friday Drive.
Experience and knowledge from the pros. Russell DeWitt Center at Building.
And as we were going to break, we were saying, but if Mississippi State could score, now they haven't scored yet. They threw a deep pass and were down at the one, and they're working on it third and goal from the 1 yard line. So it's still 26-14. Let's get to the drive hotline sponsored by Skybar.
Bill is next up.
Hey, Bill.
Hey, guys. I'm going to go over there tomorrow, support the team best I can. Maybe we'll pull it out. I was going to ask Coach Dunn, just realistically, Coach, what do you think of the options? What do you think of the chances tomorrow?
I think they're very good. I really do. I think we got some confidence after that hard-fought win at home last week. I still think we can run the ball, and we're playing good defense. And when you can do that, you've always got a chance because the old saying is defense travels. That's true. Our quarterback's been playing better. We've cut down on our turnovers. And I really believe that, like Bill and I were talking earlier, there's so much pressure that these guys don't realize that's on their backs right now for Alabama. So I think we got an excellent chance. And enjoy your trip. There's nothing better than beating them over there, buddy.
Bill, I'll say this. The players that I got a chance to hear on Monday were pretty darn loose. I mean, I feel
they feel like
a huge weight was lifted off their shoulders this past week.
They're playing with just excitement and they're going to be ready. There's not a doubt in my mind. We are going to be ready to play that game.
Okay, guys. Well, I enjoy the show. I know you're toward the end. And war eagle.
Have a safe trip.
Thank you.
Good trip, Bill. 334-321-1390. Oh, you know, it's something I haven't mentioned.
It's imperative that Auburn avoid. I think it's Alabama can't get off to a fast start.
Oh, no.
And if they do, Auburn's got to be able to match them step for step, right? Because you don't want to find yourself, down big early and letting Alabama sort of cruise and take deep shots. And the matchup, I honestly don't know how it's going to go tomorrow. But, like, the matchup tomorrow with Auburn's defensive backs trying to, the matchup with Kayan and Jay Crawford trying to stop the island, because I feel like they're going to be on an island a lot, right? Auburn's gonna do what they can with the front seven and with the secondary to put pressure on Milroe, and they're going to count on Jay and Kayan to win their matchups
against
down the
Ryan
field.
Williams and Jeremy Bernard. Bernard's a guy I think that people don't think about as much. He is another big play receiver. That's where Alabama relies so much on, huge plays with Milroe, Williams, and Bernard.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing. And those can be backbreakers. I mean, so, yeah, you're right. Auburn's going to have those guys on islands. And that's where they have to win those matchups. They have to at least stalemate.
And an early turnover or two. I mean, thinking about – it's not exactly the same thing, Coach, but thinking about the way Alabama put a scare into Auburn in that 2004 game, right?
I mean,
and that game was in Tuscaloosa.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Auburn came in as the big favorite. Auburn came in as the team that already locked up the SEC championship game appearance, but they needed to go undefeated to have any chance at the national championship game.
Right.
In 04, and Alabama for most of the first half was the better, more
had the lead at halftime.
Was the better, more comfortable team, and it was shocking. second half. We've commiserated, Coach. The worst I've ever felt physically because of what I'm watching from my favorite football team was halftime of the 04 Iron Bowl, thinking like the pit in my stomach, and like I was like. do I need to go to the hospital, or does Auburn or does Auburn just need to get something going offensively?
Yeah, I wish you'd have stopped by and picked me up.
And sure enough, Jason Campbell to Courtney Taylor gets it going, and Auburn's offense is able to
did enough to win.
Yeah, to provide the remedy, right? The medicine for
that was a big win.
It absolutely was. It would be huge. Good to be more competitive. You know, Auburn hasn't been competitive.
Yeah,
there. Lately, it's been great at Jordan Hare, mm-hmm. but it's been all Alabama and Tuscaloosa.
I don't know if an Alabama team has gone into the Iron Bowl at home coming off of a performance like that in recent years, though. Either.
Alabama hasn't had a performance like that.
I know
since Louisiana Monroe and Nick Saban's first year.
Yeah, right. I mean you're going back a lot, and that was
a six loss team,
and that was a six loss team that played a. That's I think that's the Gerard Powers gets bit by a dog Iron Bowl. I think that's 2000.
That was a Georgia game.
He got with the police dog?
Yeah, I think it was.
I think that was the Iron Bowl.
It might have been. You could be right.
I think it was Robert Baker.
I think Gerard nearly loses some fingers to a police dog, and that was Saban's first one, and then that would have been the 07.
Yes,
that's Saban's first one. But I mean it's. We're in sort of uncharted territory these last couple of years.
You're right, largely
because of the way Alabama played against Oklahoma.
Yeah. Right. So again, I think we have said we think it's going to be tight. You know, I mean, again, early on is
important.
Critical
Very important.
Don. Hopefully we enjoy the ball game tomorrow. But
really
appreciate you you stopping in. Stay warm
tonight.
Thank
you. Oh, I will. Have a great weekend.
If you have any leftover turkey that needs to find a good home.
Okay.
I'm sure I know a guy.
I'll tell you what, I never see another turkey for a couple of weeks.
Oh, I understand that feeling. All right. Don't forget, coverage starts at 9:30 with game day on Wings tomorrow, then the network coverage. And we're back on Monday. Brian Matthews joins us as well. That's going to do it for this Friday edition of The Drive. Have a great weekend, everybody. We are out of here. Hello, everybody. This is Bill Cameron from The Drive. Podcasts of The Drive are presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors, now hiring for great-paying, skilled trade positions. Call 334-209-6355 to learn more. Thanks for listening.